Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in these uncertain times. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds on the Holistic Survival Show. And by the way, be sure to visit our website at holisticsurvival.com. You can subscribe to our blog, which is totally free, has loads of great information, and there's just a lot of good content for you on the site. So make sure you take advantage of that at holisticsurvival.com. We'll be right back.
Now's your opportunity to get the Financial Freedom Report. The Financial Freedom Report provides financial self-defense in uncertain times, and it's your source for innovative, forward-thinking investment property strategies and advice. Get your newsletter subscription today. You get a digital download and even more. Go to jasonhartman.com to get yours today.
It's my pleasure to welcome Charlotte Isserbeet to the show. She's the author of The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. And I know that most of you listeners probably think just on the face of it that that title is so true. It is amazing what the institutions are doing to the population. I don't know if we're going to get conspiratorial at all about it, but boy, it is just amazing how the education system has failed us. We have spent more and more money on it, and we are seeing inferior results, and just an amazing thing, whether it be the media, the public school system, whatever. There's a lot to talk about here with the deliberate dumbing down of America. Charlotte, welcome.
Yes, thank you so much, Jason. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this interview, and it's timely. Of course, it would have been timely 100 years ago, too, perhaps. That's what we want to talk about. And
it would, and maybe every generation thinks that. But you're coming to us from beautiful Maine today. And tell us about the book, and I guess what prompted you to write it?
Well, that goes back to the early 70s when I returned from overseas. I'd been working overseas for about 20 years, and my husband and I returned in 1971. And before I go into that, your listeners can go to my website, and there's a link there, and it says America's Road to Ruin. It's a marvelous PDF. It's the transcript of about an hour and a half interview that Alex Jones did up here on the river. He sent his guys up here, and they interviewed me, and you can also look at that video. It's on YouTube, that video. But people liked it so well, you know, researchers in the country, that they transcribed that video here on the river. And it's about 16 pages. It's beautifully done, and it gives my whole background. When I first went overseas, I went over, my first experience was during the Korean War. I went overseas, and I was stationed on Guam at a strategic air command base, and then, you know, moving all the way back to the United States on a French freighter, meeting people coming out of Indochina who had been under the communists, and, you know, on and on and on. My foreign service experience, my Department of Ed experience, being fired that was the Reagan administration. I was fired from my job because I leaked an extremely important document on technology. And then prior to that, but you asked me what got me going, okay? When I hit the United States, we were working in the West Indies, the beautiful island of Grenada. My husband was a charter captain. We had our own Alden schooner. And we were down there about 7 years. And then we returned to the United States. And I do believe that I ended up in a town which was certainly one of the pilots for educational change in the country. And I started seeing these strange things in the early 70s.
What town was that?
In Camden, Maine.
Oh, that was Camden.
Town in
okay.
Camden,
right.
Maine, right on the coast. And I just couldn't believe what I was looking at. And, you know, I finally, a teacher, a retired teacher came to me and she said, I got on the local board, right? I was making a lot of noise and they hated my guts. But this retired teacher came and she said, you're absolutely right. She said, I've taught all over the world. This is the plan. You're identifying it. You're looking at how they're implementing it. And I said, well, I don't even know. You know, I said, well, I just think it's so strange what's going on. They're not teaching the children to read. They don't have desks anymore. They're sitting at tables and or on the floor. And we have all different kinds of math, not one. You know, the children have three different kinds to work out. And we've got all these values changing programs. You know, they've got survival games where the children are being asked to, you know, you've got a boat going down and it has one lifeboat, right? And only carries 10 people, and you've got 15 people, you know, on the regular boat that's going down, and they have to decide who's going to die. You know, so I was just totally naive. Babe in the Woods had been out of my country for 20 years. I didn't know what was happening to my country while I was gone. And then, so this teacher, she says, look, I want to pay for you to go for some in-service training. I didn't even know what that was. And I said, what's it about? She said, well, it's called Innovations in Education. And so she paid $100 and I went. And it was just unbelievable. They had this facilitator there, a nice man, looked normal. A lot of normal looking teachers and principals and all. This was on the coast of Maine, in Searsport, Maine, in a lovely old church or something. And this guy was telling us, teaching us how to identify the resistors in our community.
Wow.
And I thought, what? I'm being trained to identify myself. See, I didn't like what I saw. And then he was federally funded. This was a federally funded program, which subsequently, when I went into the U.S. Department of Ed as a Reagan person, into the office where that particular program was being funded, all those rotten programs were coming out of my office. And so I didn't know that, of course, at the time. I just was in absolute shock. And then he taught us how to go to, you know, the resistors and try to get them on their side, you know, say, oh, you know, Mrs. Sisterbate, you know, we're really glad to have you join us. Why don't you join this committee? Because you've been all around the world. You understand so much what's going on. We need you. So that's how they try to get you on board that way. And then with the very important people in the community, Rotary Club, Garden Club, Historical Society, et cetera, they go to those leaders and they say, look, we need this sex ed program or this drug ed program or this bullying ed program, whatever. We need this. And you get those people on your side, and then it's much easier to get the rest of the community to go with you on it, right? And, of course, subsequently I found out that all these programs were actually designed to do exactly the opposite of what they told the parents they were designed for. And I have proof in my book from
okay,
the guidance counselors.
Just, yeah, Charlotte, let's get a little specific. Like, what programs? I mean, so what you're saying is, during the Reagan administration, and this kind of surprises me that this would be the Reagan administration, but you worked for the Reagan administration and in the U.S. Department of Education, right? During the first Reagan administration. And so it kind of surprises me that these crazy programs were coming out of the Reagan administration, of all things. I would think, you know, I could see it under Clinton or Obama or something, but Reagan, I would say less so, although, you know, I don't give him a pass.
One would hope, and that's why I worked for him to get him elected, right? I mean, I'm not saying that he started those programs, right? Those programs were a result of Lyndon Johnson's Great Society, sort of 1965 on.
Okay, but what were the programs? What were they?
Well, Facing History in Ourselves is one, and World of Mankind was the one that I found in the elementary school in my school. Global Education, a global education program. I had the teacher's manual. It said right there, you know, that the focus was on a humanistic curriculum and global education and teaching the children that, you know, American history isn't all that important. You know, we're moving into all that stuff. Global education. And that was in the early 70s. But the really bad programs that I'm talking about, like the drug ed and sex ed, which I think even most Americans now realize that the results of those programs were just the opposite of what they were claimed to be, you know, to help the children. But I always felt that that was the case. I couldn't understand why they would be using these dreadful programs where the children were asked to identify, you know, who should be thrown into the water and who's allowed in a lifeboat. Hmm? This is all, you know, look, gearing up to euthanasia, abortion and all, right, you know, the importance of life. But later on, I found, and it's in my book, in my new book, the smaller one, and the big baby too, there's a very interesting issue of a publication called The Counselor, and it's the Journal of the American Guidance Counselors Association. And in 1975, they did a monthly issue on the subject of death education, and I was lucky enough to get my hands on that. Sometimes I wonder why they really just admit what they're doing. It said right in there that we will use death education to change the children's attitudes towards death and dying the same way, and this is the key, the same way we used sex education to change their attitudes and beliefs about sex and various sexual practices.
So what's amazing about this is it's this sort of gradualism, and you talk about that in your book. I like the part where you do this little table, and by the way, I'm referencing page 9 here, and you talk about...
In the new book or the old book?
In the new book. You talk about the Reinventing Schools Coalition, which is RISC is the acronym. It compares the traditional versus the risk philosophy in the classroom. And in the traditional philosophy, the 20th century classroom, movement was based on time, moving ahead, whereas in risk, movement was based on performance. In the 20th century, students sat in rows. In this new program, it's controlled chaos, sitting on the floor, on tables, whatever. It's not traditional. Before, it was driven by textbooks, and then it was driven by a shared vision. There was a teacher-controlled classroom in the past, and now the students are the navigators. Just all of these comparing and contrast, you know, it used to be the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. I know that's kind of a play. And now it's the global curriculum. The teacher used to be the judge. Now it's the self, the peers, and people outside of the teacher who are the judge of students' performance. It's just crazy. Who are some of the main culprits? You know, if you can identify maybe some people in government or in leadership positions, you're using a lot of names in your book. I see Jeb Bush, I see the CTO of eBay, et cetera, all kinds of people.
Well, yes, but I would say what you do, you see, it is gradualism. You have to go back. You know, if I only had 5 minutes to talk on the phone with you, you know, I would say that it's the tax-exempt foundation starting in the last century, the beginning of the last century, who have been instrumental in using our money, right, to take the American system of education, which really was an excellent system of education, envy of the world, and turn it on its head into a system which will bring about a change in America's economic system. A planned economy has been the goal ever since 1934 and earlier, actually. But there is this document in my book, I don't know where it is, the conclusions and recommendations for the social studies is extremely important. If you look at if you go to 1934, because this book is doesn't have the index like the other one did, but you go to 1934 and you will find the Carnegie Corporation's little blue book, and it probably is the most important book for Americans to read right now, because we're having our free enterprise system ripped right out from under us due to the UN Agenda 21, and we're having it's being substituted by a regional system, and regionalism is communism. Been admitted to being communism, right, by a communist writer. I've got that in my book too. But anyway, talking about 1934, the importance of this particular entry, Conclusions and Recommendations for the Social Studies, 1934, is that not just Carnegie, but some of the other industrialists and John Dewey and the ones that went to Russia in the 20s and 30s to study the Russian system, they came back and they decided to put the same system in here because they want a planned economy. They want the planned economy. And here's a quote from it. It says right here, of utmost importance is the following admission of the planner's goals to change our free enterprise / representative republic. The quote now. The commission was also driven to this broader conception of its task by the obvious fact that American civilization, in common with Western civilization, is passing through one of the great critical ages of history, is modifying its traditional faith and economic individualism, and is embarking upon vast experiments in social planning and control, which call for large-scale cooperation on the part of the people. Cumulative evidence supports the conclusion that in the United States, as in other countries, the age of laissez-faire in economy and government is closing, and a new age of collectivism is emerging.
Scary.
Right. Okay, then the implications for education are clear and imperative, and it's very, very important what this this book says. Well, what's happened is it's going in right now. Carnegie, I really owe a great debt of gratitude to Carnegie because they've made it very easy for me. I just followed them all the way from the early 30s through today. Their role in changing America from a free, individualistic economy to a planned economy, to changing our schools from students being taught to be individualists versus the collective, working in groups and all, no more grades. We're copying the Soviet education system. Absolutely, that's what's going in. That's what you're looking at when you're looking at those two columns there. It may not sound like it's a Soviet system, but it is, because the Soviets have never had competition in the classroom, and they've used Skinner, which is the computer, etc. So we'll go into all this later. But anyway, Carnegie, from that time on, it started putting the money into all of its experiments. The eight-year study, which actually, very interestingly enough, was the first experiment with outcomes-based education, which is what everybody hates so much, which uses the Skinner method. But, of course, the Skinner method is essential for computers. I mean, computer software is the Skinner method. He said, that's my box.
What does that mean? Tell us the Skinner method and computer software.
Well, operant conditioning, okay? It's very easy. I just try to bring it down because, folks, you know, when I first found out about all of this, I didn't know what it was either. It's very, very simple. Take your dog, right? If you want your dog to sit, you're going to say sit. If he's never been given a dog biscuit, he's not really going to sit. So what you do is you get a dog biscuit out, and you push his rear end down, and you say, sit, and you give him the dog biscuit.
Right.
The next time you want him to sit, really all you have to do is go to the cupboard and pull out the dog biscuits. Now, let's look at this in terms of human beings. This is a neurological response. There's no thinking going on there. All right. Now, if you're talking about human beings, go to the doctor. I don't know if he does it anymore. Remember how they would test your reactions with a little hammer with a rubber?
Sure, and your reflexes, yeah.
Your knee, yeah. And your knee just pops up. There's no way under the sun you can keep your knee from doing that. That is automaticity. That is a reaction that you can't control. Now, this is what you have with a computer. This is what you have with a lot of the curriculum going in right now, individualized education, even the reading instruction. They're using stimulus response, rewards, and it's very dangerous. And I must say, this is what got me moving more than anything else in researching American education. Because they don't believe that our children are human beings. We're all animals. See, that's the Darwinian philosophy. And the socialist professors and all, like Benjamin Bloom, you know, he's the one that put together the taxonomy of educational objectives. All teachers have to go through his stuff. Bloom says that the purpose of education is to change the thoughts, actions, and feelings of students. And he defines good teaching as challenging the student's fixed beliefs. All right, these are some really good quotes. This is Benjamin Bloom. He's dead now. But the whole system is based on his sick philosophy. And then, of course, you have B.F. Skinner, who said, I could make a pigeon a high achiever by reinforcing it on a proper schedule. That's mastery learning. That's the direct instruction that we're using to teach reading, because they have to get it in reading, and then they'll use the direct instruction for workforce training, because it works extremely well, and it works with the computer. You know, so what you're looking at is ultimately no books in the schools. No, in fact, I thought Arizona had gotten rid of books, because 5 years ago I read an article about Arizona not having any books, and I'm glad if you still have them, it shows people are fighting it. But it's going to be computers, and they've been planning the computers really ever since 1950s. And I even have an article in regard to computer specialists and software programmers and all back in the 60s, I think, saying down with books. Now we're moving into the digitalization of American education. Our governor, for people out there who think this woman is crazy, and I don't blame them. Sometimes I wonder myself. But for people who may wonder, our governor, who's meant to be a conservative governor, issued an executive order digitalizing all the schools.
Okay, but now, is that bad in and of itself? I mean, when you talk about computers and the way computers work, that's one thing. But when you look at e-book readers like the Kindle, for example, isn't that
thing? No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the use of computer-assisted instruction, individualized education, software that is developed to bring your child to a particular viewpoint, whether it's a skill or whether it's a particular viewpoint. It's very, very dangerous, and it's very powerful. And I'm not saying that myself. I've got so many learned papers by the very people putting it in. In fact, by the fellow who was the director of the project Better Education Skills Through Technology in the early 80s that I leaked. I leaked that to Human Events, that project, which was putting software, computer software, in every curriculum area into every single school in the country. And I leaked it. And the director of that particular project, Donald Ely, had 20 years before, I went down to the archives, Department of Ed, and I found an old paper of his, where he said, look, if you're going to be dealing with software, development of software for the computer, you have to be very careful. If you do not agree in your conscience with a message, you don't do it. And I have that paper. It's in my book. You can look under Donald Ely. And then later on, just recently, with the World Institute for Computer Assisted Teaching, Dustin Houston, he said something that's even scarier. He thinks this is great. He said, won't it be wonderful when the children in the most remote county can have the curriculum, the equivalent of the work of 5 or 10 of the world's greatest psychologists on the computer, and nobody will be able to get between the child and the computer.
Right. In other words, a teacher with actual judgment won't be in there teaching your kid. It's a computer that can be a centrally planned agenda, because that software, just like the school lunch program, can be mandated by one administration nationwide through the federal government.
It's the UN.
Yeah. Well, and the United Nations. Yeah, even worse.
That's where it all people got to forget. You know, often I have, you know, wonderful Americans doing good work in education, and they're all worrying about the Common Core and the standards and the this and the that. And I think, don't waste your time on it. You know, even if it's a good Common Core, even if it's, the basics, look, all they need is one morning the teacher can go to school and the whole thing will have been changed overnight with a push of a button. What you have to worry about is your children's souls that are being really taken away. I mean, if they can do this through the computer, and Bloom said it. Bloom said, I can take a child from here to there, from a belief in whatever, you know, his family, to a belief that the government's more important, to a belief in right to life, to a belief in abortion, in 1 hour, under the right circumstances. That's what he said. Now, Bloom is all involved with computer curriculum. This is Mastery Learning. It's B.F. Skinner. It's Pavlov. And originally, it came over from Leipzig, Germany.
Let me take a brief pause. We'll be back in just a minute.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn about investing in and managing income properties for college students, there's a show for that. If you want to learn how to get noticed online and in social media, there's a show for that. If you want to know how to save on life's largest expense, there's a show for that. And if you'd like to know about America's crime of the century, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
So I want to make sure people really understand that point, because that's a good point that you made, Charlotte. The point of the computer is very easily centralizing the thought processes of our children, because whenever there's an agenda they want to push, they can just push it through the computer, and there's no intermediary that is interpreting. It's so efficient to change the beliefs of an entire population because it can be centrally planned, and that's what's dangerous about it. And, you know, I want to touch on something just to give this whole thing a kind of a pretext, if you will, or maybe a context is a better word, and that is what you talk about in your book. At the very beginning, you talk about the devil's seven-pronged fork, and this consists of, and I'll outline them, Charlotte, and I'd like you to maybe just touch on the ones you want to.
Right, yeah, I'm glad you're bringing that up. I love that. One of my favorite things.
and you already have mentioned it, but and this is right in the beginning. You talk on page 9 about the way this is done. Number one way is through gradualism. Number two is Hegelian dialect. Number three is semantic deception. Number four, 100% conservative and liberal media control. And number five, the endless supply of money through the Federal Reserve that can print money till there's no end. Grant funding, nonprofit foundations, which, you know, are basically sanctioned by our government to go and promote an agenda because they get special tax status. Number six, brainwashing in schools and communities using psychological techniques, Pavlov, Lewin, Skinner, Bloom, etc., as you talked about. And number seven, keeping the public unaware that both political parties, Republican and Democrat, basically espouse the same values. And that's a very good point, because people... occasionally I'll get someone, you know, criticizing one of my shows saying you're too libertarian or you're too right wing or something. And the point is that whole thing is a sham in and of itself. They're cut from the same cloth. Yeah, they have slight differences. It's made to distract us. It's just more bread and circuses, really. It's like watching a wrestling match. It's a fake fight, largely.
Or divide, conquer.
Hmm? Yeah, exactly. So you want to touch on some of the devil's seven-pronged fork there, any of those
items?
Oh,
yes. I really, people can go, you know, it's in my book, but they can also type that in to their computer, Google it, the devil's seven-pronged fork. You'll have it right there in front of you on the computer. But it's, I love it. Let me first of all tell you how it happened, okay? I was doing a lot of radio. I've been doing it for over 20 years now or so, maybe. Yeah, almost 20. And I became really tired of myself one day. I think I hung up and I thought, I am so tired of beating up on these poor people. Saying, come on, folks, get with it. Don't you understand what's happening? Please, you know, tell your friends, tell your teachers, and get flyers out. You know, we're moving in an international socialist system. They're using the schools to brainwash our children so they won't object to it. You know, they don't teach the Constitution, all this stuff. Huh? And please, please do something. Call me if you want, blah, blah. And I got off, I thought, oh, I'm so tired of doing that. I feel sorry for these people. I said, you know what? It was like a message from God. It just all of a sudden it was like, boom, in my head. It's not their fault. And then I broke it down. And then, you know, to these things you just mentioned, I think we've been through it, we'll go through it again, these different subjects of gradualism, the Hegelian dialect, you know, create the problem, people scream, impose the solution, money and all this stuff. You were just talking about it. Look, what normal human being could possibly go up, no matter how brilliant you could be, have the mind of 10 Einsteins, you could not possibly go up against that agenda. And have at that, you see, I thought, I'm going to write this article because I understand what has happened to the American people. I understand this is the most evil, diabolical agenda that was ever created. And I still truly believe this. But you can't tell me that the American people, had this not been done to them, you know, all at once, in all the different aspects and the different prongs, they would have caught on. They would have caught on. But generation after generation, you know, the fog and the cold water heated up slowly. That's probably the most important part, the gradualism.
Yeah. How do you boil a frog? You turn up the water slowly, give them a nice warm jacuzzi.
Yes. And, you know, so, and then there. The education goes down, down, down. You know, the parents, my grandparents, my parents' education was far superior to mine. We have a really good, test. I'm just diverting a bit, but it's important to do so. Someone gave me this. I was speaking in California about 10 years ago. This test is about 8 pages on the U.S. Constitution. And it was given in a public school in Central California in the mid-50s. Well, Kenny had got 99 on it. And, you know, A+, really good. I looked at that test and I thought, good grief. I couldn't possibly pass that test. This is the mid-50s. Really go there. My son, who has a website, American Deception, he says that one particular entry in his website that he posted there has had more hits from all over the world, because this shows that something really happened between after World War II. The UN came in. The UN is behind all of this, whether it's Agenda 21 or whether it's outcomes-based education or school to work or get strip kids of all their values and, you know, values instilled in the home. That's all the UN. Evil as can be. This happened after 45. So Kenny Hignite, he was just lucky. See, he was 1955. What's that, 11 years later? It hadn't seeped through. Marvelous teachers across the country, across the United States of America, have hated every single bit of this new agenda. Many have gotten out. Many. I remember when they put the behavior science teacher education program in to turn the teachers into little psychiatrists. That came out of 1965, Lyndon Johnson's Great Society. When that thing came out, and they were retraining all the teachers in the different universities to be little psychiatrists, I saw the original doc volumes in the basement of a friend of mine who lived in Lansing, Michigan. She was a very good researcher. She got the whole pile. Somehow she got the volumes. And in the beginning, it said that something like 60% of the superintendents of schools, men back then, right, got out. They said, we're not going to do this. This isn't education. This is performance-based. This is Skinner. This is back, you know, 1965. Now, this is what happened. They changed education from what you know in your head to what you can do. Now, that does not make sense. If you go back to the Carnegie paper, wanting to put us into a planned economy, it's not what you know in your head. It's what you can do. Can you perform?
It's really interesting what the change has been. Well, Charlotte, we've got to get wrapping up here, but one thing I wanted to touch on before we go, and that is that some of the results of this highly agenda-oriented system we have now, rather than teach people reading, writing, and arithmetic, okay, as the old saying goes, it's an agenda. It's an agenda to change the culture, and it's an agenda toward thought control, 1984, central planning, socialism, communism, varying degrees of all that. Tell us about Agenda 21, if you would. What is that, and how are things like this being foisted upon people who are just not thinking stuff through? They're just quick to believe these sort of crazy half-baked theories and ideas, and they're just promoted in our school system. Like, it's just crazy what people are believing
nowadays.
Oh, yeah, well,
there's a really good article in the back of the big fat book. I don't know, we don't have it in the new version. It's called Big Bad Cows, I think. You know, the cows are doing their thing. When they do their little thing, it makes a lot of smell and bad stuff, right? But, you know, the Agenda 21, right now, it's probably, as I said to you earlier, you know, I've been on education for almost 40 years now. That's my subject, because I use the schools to destroy our children's values, traditional American values. I'm not getting into a religion, different religions or anything. What I'm talking about is you don't lie, you don't steal. And this is all the values clarification over the past 30 years has taught our children, you know, sometimes it's okay to steal, right? And so, it sounds normal, doesn't it? Say you're grandmother's dying and you don't have money to buy medicine. Well, they teach you, that's situational ethics. They teach you it's okay to steal. And it goes on and on and on. And so, of course, like I was talking about the survival games, you know, the boat is going down. There's only enough room in the lifeboat for 10 people, but they're going to have to get rid of the other 10. Who goes? They tell the children to decide who. You got a minister on board. You've got a pregnant woman. You've got a teacher, whatever. And you've got to decide who's going to be allowed in the lifeboat. It's a complete shift in thinking from our traditional way of looking at life, Americans, an understanding of the Constitution that they never teach anymore. My feeling is if somebody doesn't know their own system of government or doesn't understand the Constitution, now how on earth are they ever going to recognize when someone steals something from them they didn't know they had, right? I mean, that makes sense. I mean, if I didn't know that I owned something, a really nice whatever, and someone comes in at night and steals it from me, am I going to scream and yell? Why?
Well, I think the example of that is that people don't know anymore that they own the right to their own life, that they own the right to their own time and production that is the result of their life. Now they're being told that the collective owns the right to their time,
yes.
And that the
yes.
collective owns the right to their
yep.
their labor through
and
you know
land.
Taxation and regulation and their land. I mean, you don't own your own land anymore because there are so many restrictions on how anyone can use it nowadays.
Well, it's very serious, and you know, ordinarily, as I said, I deal with my own book, and I hope everybody will get my new abridged version, which is absolutely a delight to read, and what's been taken out of it can be accessed free at my website, so you don't have to worry about what's been taken out. It's just a user-friendly little book. But what I'm going to do right here, I'm going to promote somebody else's book, because people have got to wake up to what's happening, having our land taken from us. You know the old saying, you'll know it's true when it happens to you? Well, I happen to believe that Americans will not do anything until somebody comes and says, look, you know, in a very nice way, because they're all professionals, they've been highly trained, these change agents, you know, in our state capitals and in the university, everything. They know how to carry on with the Delphi technique. They have these meetings, they're all controlled meetings. Nobody's really voting the way we're used to voting. It's all being taken out. This is what you know as regional government and its comprehensive planning. And it's the UN Agenda 21, and I read you before that horrible quote, you know, from the big guy, Maurice Strong. You want me to read it again? This is the mindset. Maurice Strong, Secretary General of the UN Environment Program, Agenda 21. Don't forget, it's all being done under the environment. And I know why they did that. I had a paper that dealt with this about 30 years ago, and I lost it. And it was a Communist Party meeting where they were talking about how are they going to get Americans to give up our form of government, huh? How are they going to get us to go into a world system? And they decided that they would have to find an issue that both conservatives and liberals would agree on. And they decided the environment. And that's so true. Because none of us, I don't know anybody who doesn't want to keep green spaces, but the private sector should be in charge. The government never should be in charge of private property. So here we go. Here's what Maurice Strong, Secretary General of the UN Environment Program, said. Quote, current lifestyles and consumption patterns of the affluent middle class involving high meat intake, use of fossil fuels, appliances, just like the smart meters, I won't allow that in my house, home and workplace air conditioning and suburban housing are not sustainable. That's all got to go, folks, right? He goes on to say, the United States is the greatest threat to the global environment. It is guilty of environmental aggression against the planet. Isn't the only hope for the planet that the industrialized civilizations collapse?
Unbelievable. That is scary. You know, green trees have red roots, And that's exactly what that is. And you know what's interesting is none of these elitists who promote and espouse these ideas are living it themselves. Certainly not the most famous one of them all, Al Gore, with his $1,200 a month electric bills. I mean, this is complete hypocrisy. Arianna Huffington, Al Gore, they're telling all of us to live lesser lives while they're living even bigger lives that have huge carbon footprints. It is unbelievable in its hypocrisy. It really is.
And what about communist China? How come he picks on the United States? I mean, think of all the other countries that are affecting the environment far more than we are. But anyway, there is this really good book, and it's written by a Democrat, and her name is Rosa Khoury, K-O-I-R-E. And you can get the book. It's called Behind the Green Mask, UN Agenda 21. And you can buy that book at her website, which is, love this, don't you love this? Wait a minute, wait till you hear this one. I love it. Democrats Against UN Agenda 21.com. Democrats Against. This is, to me, I've been happier, I think, ever since I read Rose's book than I've been in about 30 years, because what I see is Democrats and Republicans are coming together. They're not going to divide us any longer, divide and conquer. They, up there in their ivory towers, like Maurice Strong and Al Gore and all of them, and the top educational change agents, these evil people, they are not going to be allowed to divide us any longer. We're all Americans. No, I don't care whether they're white, black, green, pink, gay, what. I don't care. We all have a right to our constitutional protections, and we're having them taken away. And that's why, really, you've got to get Rose's book and go to YouTube and look for what's going on under the Bay Area in California. The demonstrations there, the people are really mad. You've got people, you've got blacks, you've got whites, you've got gays, you've got a lot of people, you've got older people. They're having their land taken away by these original planners. Of course, the people, they got us all so busy that we were not paying attention when the Sacramento passed these horrible laws to control them, birth through death. That's what Arnie did, huh? So now they're dealing with the problem, and they're very unhappy, and there are four or five YouTubes there that you can look at, some very eloquent people speaking. I didn't used to think Californians were all that much, intellectual. I thought they were all for, windsurfing and surfing and skiing and this and that and having a good time.
Now, some of them are. Some of the Californians really have their head together. It's not the major way it is out there. But, there are some very smart Californians still that have not fled the oppression of the Socialist Republic of California yet. But they're on their way out. They're leaving. And, there's a few still left.
I know you left, didn't you?
Yeah, I left. I couldn't stand it any longer. Well, Charlotte, thank you so much for joining us today, and give out your website once more if you would.
Okay, it's deliberatedumbingdown.com, and I hope people will go also to Amazon. The book, my book, is at Amazon,
and it's got some great reviews on Amazon, and it's really quite a comprehensive book. The newest edition, the paperback edition, is 461 pages. So keep up the great work getting the message out there. Charlotte, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth Show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed.